Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins, and we've got a lot to talk about today. Obviously, the biggest news in the United States this week is the leak of the draft decision from the United States Supreme Court that appears to overturn Roe versus Wade. I'm going to take a deep dive into that. We're going to look at conservative responses to the leaker themselves, even though we do not know who that individual is. And coming up later in the program, we're going to have a Q&A once more. And if you want to get in on future Q&As, go subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. And for the full podcast every single week, along with access to our entire Ring of Fire archives, sign up to become a member at rofpodcast.com. Well, folks, like I mentioned in the opening, so much to talk about with this leaked draft of this Supreme Court decision. So just a little background in case anybody is not aware of some of the intricacies of this. The draft was put together in February. It was leaked to Politico, written by Justice Samuel Alito, and in what looks like it will be a 5-4 decision, not only do they uphold the partial abortion ban that the state of Mississippi had put in place, but it also calls for the overturning of Roe versus Wade, which Alito argues in his brief that obviously, since it's not mentioned in the Constitution, it cannot in fact be a constitutional right. This is an originalist interpretation of the way things are, which basically says that, hey, if it's not in the Constitution, you don't get it. You know, if it's not what the founders intended, you know, all these racist white men from 1776, if they didn't want you to have that right, you're not entitled to it. That's what the originalist interpretation is. So let's be very clear about that. If somebody ever tells you they're an originalist, you can pretty much guarantee that their mindset is stuck in the 1700s. Things change. People evolve. Systems evolve. Countries evolve. Originalists would like to think that that's not actually a thing that happens. And that's what we're dealing with Alito and the other conservatives on this bench. Now, let's get to some of the reaction. To me, in addition to how horrible this ruling is, because as many people have pointed out, this is not going to outlaw abortion. It's going to outlaw safe abortions. And that, of course, is one of the real dangers here. Women will be forced to seek shoddy medical care. They will die as a result of this. You know, they could face charges of homicide, depending on how Republicans start to pass new laws, which is something I'm going to get into in just a moment here. But before I get into the implications of this ruling, I want to talk about the two different responses. On one side, the conservative side, you have Republicans telling us that this leak is in fact somehow in and of itself an insurrection. We've never had a leak at the Supreme Court before, they tell us. This is the worst thing to ever happen. It calls into question the credibility of the court, as if that court has had any credibility in the last several decades. Mitch McConnell, Ted Cruz, I've called for jail time for whoever the leaker is. John Roberts, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, has said he's reached out to the marshal. They want to get with the FBI. They want to launch an investigation. And of course, if they do that, they're going to find out who this person is. Because right now, we have no idea. Was it a conservative? Was it a liberal? Was it a justice themselves? Who did this and why? And of course, those are questions we cannot answer. All we can offer is speculation. And so I guess I'll give a little speculation right now. Considering the angry response from Republicans focusing on the leaker rather than the decision itself, I don't know. I lean conservative. I think a conservative leaked this. And here's why I think that. Statistically speaking, there are more conservatives walking the halls of that Supreme Court than there are liberals. So just basic mathematics there, it tells us that the most likely person, given the numbers, you know, if there's a 70-30 split between conservatives and liberals, statistically, it would be more likely that a conservative would have leaked this. That is my biggest rationale, right? Just the number of people there, the political leanings would obviously go conservative. I think conservatives would do this now And again, this is just my theory. Could be 100% wrong. I'm not, you know, staking my reputation on this theory I have here. But for conservatives, they know that right now many states are in the drafting process of legislation that would limit abortion. Obviously, because of Roe, most of these pieces of legislation have limitations, you know, 15 weeks, 13 weeks. You can't get an abortion after that point. And leaking this draft could be a signal to those states, hey, you don't have to put limitations on it. You can go full blown. We don't want you to pass this legislation, you know, that has limitations when, you know, if you just wait a month or two, you can pass it with no limitations. Another thing I think they want to do is I think they want states to enact laws preventing what is being called now abortion tourism. If a red state, obviously, were to do a full-blown ban on abortion, what would happen is you would have women from that state going, traveling to the nearest abortion-friendly state, blue state, getting the procedure done and coming home. I think conservatives are going to do everything they can to still make that illegal. Like, you can't leave our state and go get this medical procedure, because that's what it is, performed, because when you come back, we're going to charge you with murder. I guarantee you on that. You know, regardless of who the leaker is, I guarantee you if this decision does in fact stand the way it is currently written, if no votes have flipped in the, you know, since February when it was originally drafted, that's what we're going to see. 100%. That I will stake my reputation on. We will see legislation that does that if this decision stands. But at the same time, could also be a liberal who leaked it, right? I mean, we got to look at both possibilities. A liberal could have come along and said, hey, oh my God, this is really bad. But you know what? We got a contentious midterm. We're already poised to lose. If I leak this and people understand how extreme these Republicans are and how bad things are about to get, maybe it's going to bolster Democratic turnout in the 2022 midterms. That's a very real possibility. It's a likely possibility as well. So those really are the two options. And I will say that out of both of them, I don't care. Honestly, could not care less who leaked it or why they leaked it, because that doesn't matter. You know, right now, conservatives, like I said, they're comparing this to January 6th. Yeah, we have seen Michael Knowles, who co-hosts a podcast with Ted Cruz. He has said it's worse than January 6th. Marjorie Taylor Greene has said it's worse than January 6th. They're all on social media, mostly invoking this January 6th insurrection talking point about the leaker, saying this leak is so much worse than the people who stormed the Capitol and killed the cops. And it's not a coincidence, by the way, that they're doing this. They're trying to, one, paint a rosier picture of January 6th and keep focus on this leaker instead of the decision. But two, they also understand that in the last few weeks, they've had a lot of really bad revelations come out about January 6th and, you know, the month and a half before it and after. And what I'm talking about is conservative lawmakers have, of course, now been implicated in Donald Trump's coup attempts. We have the text messages, we have the conversations, we have them showing up at meetings. They were involved. They were coming up with their own plans. They were talking to other people that they thought could help. They were a part of Donald Trump's coup. And of course, all of this has gotten so much worse for them within just the last 2 weeks. You know, I talked last week with Heather Parton from Salon.com, Digby, and we talked about leak week is what that was, because all those leaks last week that made Republicans look really bad and, of course, implicated them in Trump's coup attempts. Now these Republicans have the opportunity. Oh, good. We can distract them. We can somehow say that leaking this draft report is worse than an insurrection when clearly it is not. Right, that's baby brain thinking there. But that is what these conservatives are engaging in, because they know that their base is, you know, not that bright. So there's that. And then the thing that really pissed me off was the liberal response. Rather than placing blame where blame is due, what we saw begin unfolding early, actually it was late Monday evening, all through Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you know, just all week, What did the left do? We did what we always do, right? We formed this circular firing squad saying, oh, hey, people on the same aisle as me, people that I agree with on 99% of the issues, this is your fault. You did this. You did this, Susan Sarandon. You did this, Bernie Sanders supporters. No, this is Obama's fault. No, this is Ruth Bader Ginsburg's fault for not retiring. And I have seen, to be honest with you, some good arguments to back up every one of those claims. And do you know what they mean? They mean nothing. Do you know what good it does when we sit around here pointing fingers at one another saying, you did this, no, you did this? You know what good that does for us? None. It's a waste of time. And I get it. We're angry. We're pissed off. We want somebody to blame. We want some way to justify the way we're feeling. You know, that's human nature. That's basic psychology. So why not point the blame at the people that actually did this? You want to blame somebody? Blame Mitch McConnell for holding that Supreme Court seat hostage so that we couldn't, or Obama couldn't appoint somebody in 2016. Blame Mitch McConnell for that. Had he not done that, we wouldn't be in this situation now, would we? Blame Mitch McConnell again for sending all those names to Donald Trump. Blame Donald Trump for appointing 3 conservative justices to that Supreme Court. Blame Susan Collins, who is now feigning outrage about, oh, they lied to me about Roe versus Wade. How could they? You voted for them. You knew they were going to do this. Don't even try to act like you didn't know they were going to do this. Blame the Republican-controlled states, right? They're the ones who put forth this legislation that they knew would be challenged in court. And I'm going to get to that in a minute. But they knew it would be challenged. They knew it would go to the Supreme Court. And this was the outcome they were hoping for. But if you're out there and you're blaming Bernie Sanders or Susan Sarandon or Ruth Bader Ginsburg or Obama or the rest of the Democratic Party, if you're blaming any of them for this, you've missed the point. Now, like I said, there's good arguments out there right now to support the blame on each one of those individuals I mentioned. Ruth Bader Ginsburg could have retired during Obama's tenure. He could have replaced her, right? Wouldn't be in this mess. Democrats, when they had full control in 2012, Obama was president. They had Congress. They could have codified Roe. Sure. All those disillusioned people who didn't vote for Hillary in 2016, had they done that, maybe she would have won, and maybe we wouldn't have those 3 conservative justices up there. Maybe. It's technically not even Bernie Sanders' fault, though, because he did go out and campaign for her. So he actually, I wouldn't blame him at all. That's kind of ridiculous. But even if we go out there and we do the shoulda, woulda, coulda, what does that change? What does that do? Does it make you feel better when you lay your head down on your pillow at night? Does that make you feel better about this decision? Saying, well, okay, it happened, but at least I got to get on Twitter and give Susan Sarandon what for? Or when you're laying there thinking, haha, at least I showed those, you know, moderate corporate Democrats what for? Oh, they did this. The people who issued the ruling did this. That's it. That's who you blame. Blaming anyone else is unhelpful at this point. What's done is done. What matters now is what we do going forward. But the people on the left, my God, they don't want to look forward. They want to look backward. Because we always do that. We want to pick apart one another. You're not progressive enough. You're too progressive. Honestly, and I see my friends doing this on social media, and it pains me to see this because it doesn't do anything. People's rights are under attack here. And by the way, if you think this stops at overturning Roe versus Wade, absolutely not. This opens the floodgates. Alito, by the way, mentioned as much in his ruling where he talked about the Obergefell v. Hodges decision, which, of course, held that all marriages, including same-sex ones, are protected by the Constitution. He referenced Lawrence v. Texas, which held that intimate sexual activity is also protected by the Constitution. And he mentioned specifically those 2 cases, saying that they were decided upon on the same faulty logic that Roe was. So if they're successful here, guess what happens next? They're coming after same-sex marriage. They're coming after your very sex life. He admitted as much in this draft ruling, folks. This is not speculation. He said it. He said it. So what happens at that point? Well, first, obviously, the Supreme Court can't just willy-nilly do this. What they have to do is wait for a Republican-controlled state to enact some kind of law banning those things. So once they get to that point, then all they have to do is wait for a liberal group to file a lawsuit and then hope it makes its way to the Supreme Court. Now listen, what I'm about to say may not sit well with some people, but I do have to point this out because as unpleasant as it is the reality. We also wouldn't be in this situation had those lawsuits not been filed against these laws. It was bait. That's why they passed these laws, folks. They're baiting us. They're begging us to sue them, to challenge them in court, so that they can take them to the Supreme Court in an attempt to get them overturned. Now, I'm not saying the lawsuit shouldn't have happened, okay? Don't misconstrue this and say that I don't think we should sue when they try to oppress us, because we should. But sometimes, and you know this if you follow the news, if you're listening to this, clearly you follow the news, sometimes the lawsuits are actually filed on the same day that the bill becomes a law. So maybe we ought to cool down just a little bit, right? Maybe let's not jump and immediately take that bait the second they throw it into the water, okay? Let's be smart little fishies. Let's look at all of the options. Let's craft legal arguments in ways that are not going to be construed by courts to overturn existing precedent. There is a smart way to challenge these lawsuits, and we don't always wait long enough to do things the smart way. And I'm sorry if that offends anybody. I know we have, you know, people that listen from those organizations that do sometimes file these lawsuits. I am not trying to insult you. I'm not trying to demean your work at all. What I am saying is take a step back, take a breath, and let's think more rationally and legally before we just rush to challenge something as up, straight up unconstitutional, can't do this, we're filing a lawsuit today. You just signed it, the ink's not even dry, but we're already taking your ass to court. That's part of the reason we end up in this mess too. Like I said, a lot of blame to go around, but none of it matters. What matters is how smart we are going forward. So when they do try to file, pass these new laws, you know, to outlaw same-sex marriage, the slippery slope here that we're about to be on, that we're on, we're on it, we're already on it. Let's not rush to file lawsuits. Let's get a consortium of lawyers. Let's make sure that the lawsuit challenge itself is written in a way that can't be basically used by a court to take away other rights, is what I'm saying. Because that's what happened with this Roe decision. You're free to disagree with me on that if you want. But I maintain that we need to just not put the brakes on these lawsuits, but maybe slow it down just a little bit so we can craft better legal arguments. But again, what matters is what's done. What matters is what we do going forward. We cannot keep looking backwards. We can't form these circular firing squads. We are up against something on the right that has more people, way more funding, bigger audiences, and something even more important, unity. We don't have that on the left. That's why we're so discombobulated. That's why we form these circular firing squads. That's why we're always at each other's throats and picking fights and all whatnot on social media. For the most part, they're not doing that over there on the right. They're out there. They're all saying the same things. They got YouTube audiences 10 times bigger than anybody on the left could ever dream of. And that's not an exaggeration. They're beating all of us. And they've got more money, of course, and the billionaire money coming out there. While they bitch and whine about George Soros is funding everything, first of all, no, he's not. Second of all, y'all have got like 30 billionaires funding everything you do. So shut up about one dude that occasionally gives a little bit of money to some things on the left. But that's what we're up against, and we're doing a pretty poor job of fighting back against it because we're too damn busy fighting ourselves instead of going after the real enemies. So having said all of that, I think I've gotten everything off of my chest that I want to, but I do want to say, rest assured, we're not dropping this issue. You know, next week I do hope to bring on guests to talk about this issue, but this week I had too much I wanted to say about it. things that I had to get off my chest. And so that's why I opted to go it alone there. But anyway, folks, it is time for the Q&A. And as I always mention, if you want to be a part of future Q&As, at this point doing about once a month at least, go sign up, subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheRingOfFire, and keep an eye on that community tab because that's where I post these. So without further ado, let's get right down to it. Here's a question from an account called Make Racists Afraid Again. It says, should there be a limit on how much support we send to Ukraine? I say no. They are fighting our war. We can at least pay for it. Should there be a limit? That's a tough one, right? They're our allies. They're being attacked. And I would rather be sending them money than sending them our troops. That's for sure. I don't want our troops on the ground over there at all for any reason, no matter what. But should there be a limit on it? I mean, Biden tweeted out this week, we've already sent them $3 billion worth of stuff and we're going to be sending more. And okay, but we have people here that need student loan debt relief. We have people here that need medical debt relief. If we were taking care of our people at home, I wouldn't care how much we were sending over there to Ukraine. Unfortunately, we're not. So we got people living in poverty, struggling to, figure out if they're even going to be able to eat for the next few days, watching our government tell them on one side, oh, we don't have money to help you, and then watching them boast on the other, we're sending another $2 billion to Ukraine next week. Yeah, kind of disheartening, isn't it? I support Ukraine. I absolutely do. I'm proud that the United States government has not sent U.S. troops over there. We are, of course, sending weapons. So the military-industrial complex, they're getting their money out of this. But at some point, we can't just continue funding this. We're not at that point yet, luckily. Not going to be there, I think, for a while. We have to see how it plays out. And so that's a little bit of a difficult question to answer. So I hope I kind of gave a clear enough response to that. Next question is from Dr. Dark Crow, who asks, living in a blue state like Illinois, I wonder what I can do to move things further left at a local level. What would you recommend? Also adds, by the way, Ring of Fire and the Young Turks have given me a desire to fight for change. I just don't know what to do. There's two things you can do right off the bat. One, run for something. That's the simplest, easiest and quickest way. And I'm not talking about going and running for Congress. I'm talking about you got local elections. You've got little offices here and there. Run for those. And if being an office holder is not in your agenda, then the second best thing you can do is show up. Go to city council meetings. Go to town hall meetings, whatever they have. Anytime there is a public gathering about local government and whatnot, show up. Show up and ask questions. Show up and ask them difficult questions. Do research. Show up with it. Make your voice heard. All politics is local. And if you're not getting involved at the local level, if you are not showing up, if you are not doing your due diligence at home, then what are you? You're just a voter at that point. So that would be my advice on the best things to do. Next question from Robert Pukey Ray says, Stephen Donziger is the lawyer that fought oil in the Amazon. Would you please make some videos on that? Maybe you have, so I apologize if I missed that. I know Ring of Fire has lawyers with a conscience for these kinds of things. Thank you. We actually have. We definitely have. In fact, we've been covering the Steve Donziger thing before he even got prosecuted. Greg Palast was one of the investigative journalists that uncovered what was going on down there in the Amazon. Donziger, of course, was the lawyer. Palast was working with him for a very long time down there. We were having Palast on our show. This was back when it was even on the radio all the time to talk about it. And then, of course, we've done segments about the unfair prosecution and detention of Donziger. Of course, I'll be fair. I have not done it since he has been released. Probably haven't talked about it as much as I should. So, I do apologize for that. But to answer your question, yes, we have. And if you want to see them, obviously, YouTube channel, click on the little, once you're on our channel, The Ring of Fire, click on the little magnifying glass thing for search, type in Donziger, you'll find the videos. Next question is from Todd's Talk. Says, if the GOP still takes over due to redistricting in the House, and if we get more electable candidates, what could be done to protect the rights of anything? Let's say for this experiment, the Senate holds, but the GOP takes back the House with a Democratic Senate. Can anything be done? No. May not be the answer that you're looking for, but that is the answer. No. If Republicans have the House and Democrats have the Senate, Republicans have already made it clear they're going to use the House to do nothing but obstruct and hold hearings about stupid things. Hearings about pulling out of Afghanistan. Hearings about Hunter Biden and that darn laptop. And now, of course, we're probably going to have hearings about the Supreme Court leaker. That's what they're going to be doing in the House. On the Senate side, we can get some judges appointed, sure, which Biden, to his credit, has been doing a great job on that. He is actually further ahead with appointing judges, getting judges appointed and approved, all that, than Donald Trump was at this point in his presidency. So Biden is kicking butt on getting judges placed. And I got to be honest, they're good judges, right? We're getting public defenders. We're getting actual plaintiff's lawyers. Biden is not doing what Democrats typically do and Republicans always do, which is go out there to these corporate law firms, people that have made fortunes representing corporations and putting them on the bench. Biden's not doing that. So I don't know who's advising him on his judicial picks, but keep it up because these are great. So that's what we could get out of the Senate if the Democrats retain control. We get some judges appointed. We'll probably have, you know, some budget fights. We probably, I hate to say it, probably going to end up with a government shutdown at some point if Republicans have the House and Democrats have the Senate. Just because, you know, you're going to have a hard time with a budget that the Democrats want and the Republicans want. So you're going to have fights there. Beyond that, no. Republicans are not going to do anything if they have the House of Representatives other than abuse that power to make the lives of Democrats a living hell. And again, they've told us that. They've made it clear that's all we're going to do. So buckle up, because no matter what, the next 2 years are going to suck. A question from Mike W. says, who actually voted for DeSantis? Rigged election? No, listen. Who voted for DeSantis? Unfortunately, a majority of Floridians. Florida is so much more red than people give it credit for. And I wish more people really did understand that. This is not a swing state anymore, folks. The 2020 election proved that. Donald Trump winning by 3.3 percentage points is actually one of the biggest margin of victories that we have seen in a statewide election in this state in over 20 years. 20 years. And it continues to trend Republican. Let me put it this way. Everybody always thinks a state like Alabama, right? They're the most conservative state. Alabama has had a Democrat as their governor more recently than the state of Florida has. Okay. In fact, their current governor, even though she's, you know, a hard right, I love Trump person, she actually used to also be a Democrat. Okay. Alabama has put a Democrat in that governor's mansion more recently than Florida put one in theirs. We are a red state, and I wish the Democrats would wake up to that reality. We have very large, very blue portions of the state, but DeSantis is redistricting. He's getting rid of one predominantly African-American district that was a Democrat, splitting it into two Republican districts because he's apparently allowed to. And so the state is going to get even worse. It's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. The only X factor that I have to point out is the COVID deaths, right? Somewhere between 70 and 80,000 people in the state of Florida have died from COVID. And of course, we know that Republicans have died at a much higher rate than liberals have, Democrats. So that could affect races in the future. We won't honestly know that until election day and those votes start coming in. So if for some reason Ron DeSantis actually loses the governorship, of course they're going to cry, you know, election theft. But I think what it will be due to will be all of those conservatives that he helped put in the ground by not taking COVID seriously. Look, that's it for this week's free portion of the Ring of Fire podcast. But if you want the rest of this week's show and access to the entire Ring of Fire archives, go sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com.